Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride's here, too, because she's a good friend of ours and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Don't know what we'd do without her, and we don't like to do it either. We don't like to do without her. Sometimes we give her a week off or two from time to time, but it's not nearly as much fun when you're not here, Joan. Welcome back.
Is this part of being nice to Writer's Day or something?
This is Be Kind to Editors and Writers Month. Gee. So that means...
A whole month?
That means it's a whole month.
I missed that. Oh,
I'm going to have to be nice to you for a whole month.
This is great.
Well, Joan,
count how many Thursdays there are.
You know, Joan, I'm a writer too, so this works both ways. So, my audience is they're probably saying, no, please don't be nice to Jim.
That would be boring.
That's the fun part. They like. Joan, welcome back. It's good to have you here. And
Thank you. By
the way, this is also National Biscuit Month.
Ooh.
And National Chicken Month.
And then put the two together, chicken and biscuits.
That sounds good. That's right. You're making me hungry already. Joan, let's talk about the first page. You guys, the lead line is, despite headwinds gathering for 2006, which we'll get you to tell us what that is, no let up in pricey gasoline and other fuels, the U.S. consumer won't run for cover.
Right. Well, and remember, this was written before the events of
this week.
So
this weekend,
we may have to, I'm sure we've got our economic writers working on that right now, so we may have different things to say next week. But as of last week, what we were saying was that, you know, we see some problems ahead next year, but we still think that the economy will be strong enough to handle those problems.
When this was written, Hurricane Katrina was a tropical storm.
Right.
Had not even, you know, had just become, was heading toward California, I mean, towards Florida. And so it's amazing, isn't it, Joan, how things can change, how Mother Nature can change things in that short a time frame.
Boy, it just, like, literally overnight.
Think about that storm going from a Category 1 to being downgraded again. I mean, I don't remember a storm going from basically being just a tropical depression or tropical storm to a Category 5 plus in that short a period of time. Do you?
Yeah, and I don't know if it has to do with being in the Gulf or how that worked, but yeah, it really became a monster storm pretty quickly.
Well, that water, I understand that in order for the storm to really to generate and to really build itself, they need water in around 90 degrees, and apparently the water in the Gulf was like 92 or 3 or 4 degrees.
Oh, okay.
So it was superheated compared to, you know, what it needed to be. Anyway, so yeah, of course, you say this lead says U.S. consumers, and even though, Joan, I believe we're going to see that what's happened in the Gulf Coast area, I think we're going to see that having a drag on the GDP for the rest of the year. It's still, you know, the rest of America, the consumers in the rest of America are going to continue to march, with the exception of the price of gasoline.
Well, and see, that's the thing that's beginning to worry me. Not beginning to, but it's an increasing worry, because now we're pretty well over $3 a gallon, and I don't know how soon that's going to come back down.
Well, and this is not a speculation issue. This is it's not even a demand issue. It's a supply issue, right? Because how many hundreds of platforms were shut down that I don't know how long it'll take to get them back up. We had one of our petroleum experts was on this week, actually yesterday, and he said when they leave those platforms, they have to shut everything down, and when they go back, they have to inspect all of the rigging and all the connections to make sure that nothing's been knocked loose.
Right.
Before
there's
they crank
gotta
it back up.
There's got to be a lag time there. And I'm just reading in the paper, I'm not sure if it's North Carolina or South Carolina, but one of those states just said that they only have about a week's worth of gasoline in the state anywhere, and that they're getting close to running dry. So you're going to, and lines are already forming in some areas.
Well, and you've got about a dozen refineries in that part of the world.
Yes.
That have been knocked offline, and I don't know what kind of damage they've received, but we still don't know what the impact of that's going to have on the economy, do we? Of that region.
Well, no, we don't. I mean, there's a lot of concern out there, but it's and I'm hoping that Kiplinger will have an answer for you next week, because I'm sure that that's what they're working on right now.
Well, but and of course, you know, every day brings new information.
Right.
This is something, you know, maybe even every hour for right now for a while. So, you know, even what you guys publish on Friday. By Saturday, you know, read it quickly, folks, because it's going to be changing. But back to the rest of the nation, in terms of, one of the things you guys point out is that income is poised to accelerate on real and inflation-adjusted basis. Tell us about that.
Well, we're saying that salary increases will average about 3.5%, which is a little bit higher than 2005. And I've also read elsewhere that this is a group, if you're someone looking for a job, you know, a skilled worker, this is a great season. This fall is a great season to find a job. You know, there's a lot of hiring going on.
3.5% raises. You know, that's going to apply to employees, but it probably won't apply to the owners, Joan.
Well, we're talking about
I'm probably
employees.
Not going to get a 3.5% increase this year myself.
No, it'll be 5, right?
Yeah. No, it'll be probably more like 0.5.
Oh.
Hiring. Now, this is you were just alluding to this. Hiring, according to Kiplinger, is going to remain fairly robust. And, Joan, unemployment is at 5%. I mean, my economists on the Brain Trust are saying that we've got near full employment in the United States.
That's funny, because we've always wondered, what is full employment? And it's interesting.
We used to say 4%, didn't we?
I thought we did, yeah.
But we're saying 5% now.
Wow.
I think. So that's pretty interesting.
Interesting, But
you say that the 1.9 million jobs added in what period? Over what period of time? I was thinking it was about 2.5 over the last 2 years. Is that in the future?
I
think that means coming up, doesn't it?
I think we're talking about 2006.
2006, 1.9, almost 2 million jobs.
Yeah.
Wow. Maybe I can get one of those good paying jobs, Joan.
Yeah.
20 after. We're going to be right back. I have to be nice to Joan, folks, while we're off on a break, which I'll do right after these messages. She and I will be right back at 20 after. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. The small business advocate, Joan Pride, is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll subscribe to my free newsletter and check it out when you get a chance. I think you'll like it. It comes on Sunday, every Sunday, by email. We're now in our sixth year of the letter. And I think I mentioned it comes up by email. Also, my blog, Jim's blog, you can find it on the website, or you can go to jimsblog.biz, and you can, if you're familiar with really simple syndication, you have the ability to receive the information that we post on the blog through RSS. And if you don't know about that, go to Google and find out about that. This is a very interesting, very exciting new technology, new capability. Joan, are you familiar with that?
No.
With RSS?
No.
Really simple syndication.
I'm a dinosaur.
No, you're not. But, well, you know, a lot of people, though, pretty tech-savvy folks like you are not as familiar with this. But this is a very exciting way to get the information that you want. Mm-hmm. It's an exciting way for people who, like Kiplinger and my organization, who creates content and distributes it. It's an exciting way for us to get that out to the folks who want our stuff. And it's pretty exciting, folks. If you haven't done it, If you go to my website, you should be able to find the information you need. Go to the blog. You should be able to find the information you need to get the really simple syndication technology and to see how it works. It's really pretty cool stuff. So I hope you'll check that out.
Sounds neat.
Joan, let's get back to the letter and talk about energy. We were just talking about the fact that consumers were going to be, we're going to continue to be pretty positive. And you're saying that energy is taking a smaller toll on the economy than in the past. And that's still true. That part is still true, isn't it?
Well, I sure hope so.
It still is. No, it's a smaller.
Okay.
Per dollar of GDP, it takes half as much petroleum today to produce a dollar of GDP than it did, say, 20 years ago. And so from that standpoint, we're less reliant upon petroleum. But that doesn't have anything to do. That's cold comfort when we're putting $40, $50, $60 worth of gas in our automobiles.
Right, because as we say at the bottom of this page, energy prices remain worrisome. And again, this was written before Hurricane Katrina, so you can, you know, ratchet up that worry a little bit. And I think I heard someone say on the radio today, this may be the death knell for the big SUV.
Yeah, I have an Explorer, and it's a very handy automobile. With traveling the way I do, carrying my stuff, you know, in and out, it's awfully handy. It's not a big gas guzzler. It's just a sort of a medium sized gas guzzler, but it has a 22 gallon tank of gas, a gas tank on it, and it cost me $62 to fill it up yesterday.
Wow. Gee.
Yeah, but you know, I was in New York. And the gas prices on the way to the airport yesterday was only about $2.80 for regular.
Gee, is that all?
But seriously, wouldn't you have thought that in New York, under the circumstances this week, that it would have been higher than that?
Right. Yeah, I would think so.
I mean, obviously, I didn't mean to make it sound like it.
No, I know.
But you know, it didn't offend me. But it still, it's surprising.
It's
still
all
offended.
Relative.
I was offended, no question about
relatively
that.
Relatively less offended.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how all this happens. We still haven't found, Joan, the pain point for gasoline prices, have we? I mean, and we don't like what we've got, but at what point in time does it get to the point where we say, you know what, this is just too painful, and we start changing our behavior? What do you think, Joan?
Well, this is happening at an interesting time. I think it would be rougher if it was happening at the beginning of the summer travel season.
Yeah.
I think that this would be the point where you would see a lot of major changes in travel plans. But because this is the end of the travel season, I'm not sure how you're going to be able to gauge it.
Well, one thing that's probably going to have to happen is if gas prices do remain the way they are, this will, I think, have an influence on wages. Because you've got a lot of people who are making, you know, say less than $10 an hour, closer to minimum wage, and these higher oil prices are really cutting into their, if they have any disposable income at all, it's sapping whatever they had.
Right.
And so, you know, I think there's going to be some pressure on employers to make adjustments in pay because of the gas prices. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think that makes sense, sure.
So we'll see how that works out. You guys point out, Kiplinger points out, that retail sales are expected to increase by about 4%.
That's not bad, which is, although interesting, it's slightly, what would be slightly off this year's 5%.
Right.
But I would still take 4%.
In 06, we're talking obviously.
Correct.
Here. Yeah. Very interesting, Joan. You know, Joan, when I think about what's happened with the hurricane ravaged area, I can't help but think about 9/11, and how the national economy took a hit, and reeled from that. You know, there wasn't as much physical devastation as it is down there, but it really was a shock to the national economy. I know that there's so many things that we're going to find out that has hurt us, the nation, not just that region, with this occurrence. But I think we're going to be impressed over the next 2 or 3 weeks how we also recover from it. And that'll be interesting to see. 29 right. After, we're going to be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We got more to come after these messages. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me today. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and Joan, your website is Kiplinger.com, and I always encourage people to check it out because it's a good site. It's a good place to go and get information, and you can noodle around on it and pick up some free stuff, but you can also subscribe to their publications and get into the back of the website, back in there where there's a lot more information, and you can do that by going to the website, can't they, Joan?
Absolutely.
At Kiplinger.com, and mm-hmm. also, of course, the letter that Joan and I work off of, the weekly letter, the flagship publication is the Kiplinger letter. That's every week, and then they've got three biweekly letters: the California, the Tax, and the Agriculture letter. And then you've got this magazine that I saw on the newsstand yesterday, Joan.
Right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Why don't you give us that phone number too, please?
Right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And that's where you can go to ask about that 30-day free trial, which they'll also give you on the website, too, won't they?
Oh, absolutely.
So just check it out there. Joan, I love this little box you guys put on the front page. This is the handiest little thing that you guys have ever done. You haven't always done this, have you? It's only been, the last year that you've been doing this little box?
Well, just probably a couple of months, because remember, this used to be like a little table of contents.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
There's been a box there ever since the redesign, but...
Okay.
We've changed the we thought that it might be more useful for readers rather than have a contents box to have this forecast box. And then, as you know, we changed the forecast. We forecast different types of things. And, mm-hmm. and right now this is just our basic, forecast for legislation, really.
Right, right. And one of the things is the estate tax changes. This has a check mark by it, Joan. I guess that means that we think this is going to happen, maybe.
Well, yes, but we say, and remember, we say it's state tax changes, not permanent repeal.
Right, right.
That's the key there, or mm-hmm. it would have a big X.
But there are going to be higher exemptions, meaning that more small businesses,
larger estates
will be excluded from paying estate tax.
Right.
And of course, you know, Joan, as we've said before, we might not like the number, but we got to like the trend. We're trending toward a repeal.
Right.
That's where we got to be headed, and I hope that happens. And of course, if we ever abolish the IRS and the income tax code that we have now and get a flat tax, according to Steve Forbes, whose new book is out on flat tax, he says, you know, estate tax is not part of his plan. It's not part of the flat tax.
Yeah, right.
Be no estate tax. Zip, mm-hmm. zero. And which I think is a good thing. Also, Joan, the tax break extensions, you say those are going to happen?
That's right. For example, there's one that's going to expire regarding the AMT, which keeps a lot of people out of the AMT that would otherwise have to be in it. That will be extended. And
alternative minimum tax.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. And several others that we say will pass later this year.
Right. And some people call that the alternative maximum tax, Joan.
Right.
Because of the way it hits them. And folks, if you're not familiar with this, you may wind up being this year. Because Joan, I don't know the percentages. You may know this, but of average Americans, medium, you know, moderate income Americans, more and more of them are being hit by AMT every year, aren't they?
Oh, no question about it. It's getting scary.
It's this little parallel universe of tax calculation that's out there that runs along beside your other your regular tax calculation. And if based on this law, the AMT part of the code, if you don't pay enough taxes with your regular you know, in your regular tax calculation, the AMT has to be calculated.
But and the problem is the deck is kind of stacked against you because there's been a lot of tax credits that Congress has approved in the last few years that count against your regular tax but don't count against the AMT.
Right.
So you have to add those things back in. And then the other problem is when the AMT was developed, it was never indexed for the levels were never
right.
indexed for inflation.
That's
so
the reason
take
why
those
more
two things together and you have kind of a perfect storm there, and that's why you have middle income. You've got someone in a high tax state with, say many children with a child credit and other credits
right.
that they're using, they can get nailed even though they're not considered quote unquote wealthy that the AMT was designed to catch in the first place.
Exactly. Well, and the thing is, if you want to get really mad about this, folks, you have to understand that AMT was designed in the 80s to prevent people who were avoiding tax by tax loopholes. Those tax loopholes aren't there anymore, but we still have the tax. And that makes me mad when I think about that. Stand by. Quick break. Right back after these messages. It's 20 Tales. Stay with us. We're back at 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame. The small business advocate, Joan Pride, is our guest. And Joan, I want to come back to this AMT thing. I want to get people excited about this because they need to be talking to their elected representatives. Alternative minimum tax needs to be abolished. As we said earlier, it was developed in the 80s when there were a lot of tax avoidance mechanisms that were legal in those days. That people were taking advantage of, and so the alternative minimum tax was created so that those people would have to pay some tax. Well, the Tax Reform Act of 86 abolished all of those tax loopholes, but the alternative minimum tax was not abolished, and now it's being applied to people who, Joan, weren't even alive in 1986.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
When AMT was first came out, we got people who are graduating from high school going to work of course they may not be subject to AMT, but there are people that are filing tax returns right now that weren't even alive in those days that could be subject to it, and it's just ridiculous that we're still having this thing, and I know what it is. I mean it's the fact that the government has gotten hooked on this revenue stream.
Well, I don't know if it's gotten hooked, but the rules for the AMT have to be changed somehow. But the way the rules for revenue are, you can't just change it because that's a revenue loss to the federal government.
That's my point. That's the hooked part I'm talking about, Joan.
Well,
you can talk about being hooked
all you want, but like I've said, if you get rid of all the domestic discretionary spending in the budget, you still have a problem.
I know. I agree. But you got to admit, AMT is not a fair tax. You don't agree with that?
Well, I never said it was. No,
yeah, okay.
I know it's a very unfair tax because of the two things that have occurred in terms of the way it ratchets down to the middle class.
The Patriot.
But I don't want to leave your listeners with the impression that the federal government is sitting there saying, "Oh, we love this revenue so much we can't live without it. That's why we're going to keep the AMT in place."
That's exactly what I'm saying. Those are my exact intentions.
Well,
John.
That's not true.
Well, it is true, too.
No, it's not.
All right, but I'm going to be nice to you because this is Be Nice to National Writers and Editors Week. I'm going to move on to the Patriot Act.
You're allowed to be wrong. It's okay.
The Patriot Act. Are we going to get an extension on the Patriot Act, John?
Well, we say we will.
Good. This is a good thing. The Patriot Act. Folks, I've told you this before. I talked with Congressman, I've lost his name, from Connecticut.
You're still thinking about the AMT.
Christopher Shays from Connecticut, and he told me, and this is not some right wing nut, folks. This is a moderate Republican, very serious individual, member of the Intelligence Committee, and he looked me in the eye and he said, "Jim, we must renew the Patriot Act," and I believe him. Joan, that's the thing. The Patriot Act, if nothing else, pull the wall down between the CIA and the FBI so that they could communicate with each other to fight terrorists.
Right.
Any comments?
Well, I know that there's been a lot of controversy about the Patriot Act. The problem is I don't know a whole lot about it. So I'll just defer to you.
Well, that's enough for me to know. It's enough for me to know that if the wall had not been where, if we had not erected a wall between the FBI and CIA, there's a chance that we would have had a better ability to have prevented 911. And I believe
right. Well, that's only one small part of the Patriot Act.
It's a pretty important small part, though.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
bigger than I believe. No, I'd be interested in your thoughts on it if you want to give them, but I'm definitely a major supporter and proponent of the Patriot Act. And I'm glad they're going to renew it. Joan, let's move over and talk about lobbying. Let's go over to page 3
okay.
and talk about lobbying. This is interesting. The you guys report that U.S. businesses will spend more than $3 billion this year on making sure their voices are heard. Talk to us about that.
Boy, I know that's a huge amount.
$3 billion.
And it's netting them some pretty major legislation this year, if you think about it, because mm-hmm. you've got the energy bill and the highway bill that have already come through. And I guess we're expecting to see major changes in telecommunications law as well.
Well, you know, Joan, when you read that, you typically think of big companies. But you know what? Small businesses are getting their lobbying act together, too. We have our own.
Well, they should. Yeah.
We have our own lobbying efforts going on out there. We've got people like the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Council. We've got the NFIB. We've got Small Business Exporters Association. We've got a number of organizations that are making their voices heard to make sure that small businesses are not harmed, and are in fact helped by legislation.
Right.
And it's
well, then are you saying that there are issues where big business and small business may not come together, that they may diverge, so small business needs their own voice?
There's no question about it.
Okay.
Absolutely no question about it. There are times when we're partners, and there are times when we're competitors.
Yeah.
I won't say enemies, I'm just going to say competitors. Where we have different agendas. But the thing is small business is a separate In a lot of ways, in terms of the things that are important to us, there are distinct things that are important to small businesses that are not important to big companies. And we have to lobby for those things, Joan.
Right.
One thing that I think is interesting is you guys point out that part of the lobbying influence that's going to be that's being seen in Washington is from China. Talk to us about that.
Right. We say that there's a lobbying firm known as Patton Boggs, which is very huge, and Beijing has signed on with them, so they're going to be a player.
And when we come back, I want you to talk about that just a little bit more, and then we're going to move on to some other issues and talk a little bit about Iraq. Right after these messages, it's 10 Till. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pride.
I ain't got no woman just to call my special friend.
Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pride is our guest, and we're talking about what Kiplinger has to say in the most recent Kiplinger letter. Joan, you guys got an anniversary coming up this month.
We do?
I got to get Mr. Kiplinger on the show to celebrate that anniversary again. He and I have done that many times before. And Mr. Austin Kiplinger, the editor emeritus and the son of the founder of
Kiplinger. He's the witness to the 20th century.
He is a witness to a century, no question about it. What a treasure he is, ladies and gentlemen. If you ever have a chance to see him or to hear anything he has to say, I promise you it's worth it.
Absolutely.
Go out of your way if you have to. He is, I think he's a national treasure.
I agree,
and I'm proud.
Hey, something we agree on.
I'm proud that that I consider him to be a friend of mine, and I'm very proud of that relationship. Joan, we're talking about China. We're talking about lobbying, and China has hired this high powered lobbying organization. What are they going to ask them to do?
Well, see, they had gotten burned earlier this year, and I don't know how to pronounce this company's
CNOOC.
Name. CNOOC.
Yeah.
CNOOC had tried to buy Unocal, which is a big U.S. firm, and that kind of ruffled
a lot of petroleum companies.
Yes, it kind of ruffled a lot of feathers here, And it ended up dropping its bid, but I think they're kind of mad now. So, you know, you don't get mad, you get even. And I think they've learned a good lesson from that incident. And so they're going to have representation in Washington now with using a United States lobbying firm.
Right. And there are two things I want to say about this, Joe. Number one, the problem with the CNOOC, UNICAL problem is CNOOC is 70% owned by the government of China.
Ooh.
That's the reason. That's the fatal flaw in that transaction.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the lobbying organizations can overcome that. I hope they cannot, because I'm, you know, as you know, Joan, I'm a free trader. I'm a globalist. But I do think that it's not a good idea for a U.S. company to be purchased by a company that's primarily owned by a foreign government.
Wow. Something else we agree on.
When you think about there's so many companies in the United States that are now owned by French companies, by Dutch companies, by Swedish companies, by Italian companies, et cetera, but those companies are owned by the shareholders, who are all over the world.
Well, right. It would be like the Chinese government owning an American company, basically.
Even though CNOOC is listed on stock exchanges, it's still 70% owned.
True.
So that was the structural flaw of that transaction, and I hope they don't fix that until they divest themselves of that company. The other thing, Joan, about China is to me an example of my concern about the United States signing on to Kyoto. You know, China does not have to comply to Kyoto because they're a developing nation. But if the United States did, and I can see China hiring law firms, U.S. law firms. I predicted this. If we ever do this, I predicted China, for example, would hire U.S. law firms to take U.S. companies to court to make them comply with Kyoto 101%, which would make us uncompetitive with China. We have a competitive tension with China right now in a lot of areas where the United States would be hindered.
Right.
And China hiring a U.S. lobbying organization to lobby Congress, to me, is a bellwether for what they would do if we subscribe to Kyoto.
Oh, I see.
See my point?
Yeah.
And they could get and if we try to do that, can you imagine, Joe? Think about this. Let's come back to the lobbying thing. Can you imagine what would happen if we tried to hire a lobbyist in China to influence that government? Where would we go? What phone number would we call?
That's a good question.
There isn't. I mean, do you even think there is one?
I can't imagine.
Is there a lobbying? There is no lobbying in China.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't think there is. I know people who are able to influence, have business influences over there. It's just not the same kind of environment, is it, Joan?
I can't imagine that it is. No.
Over there. Yeah. Joan, moving over. I tell you what. Let's move down. We're not going to get to Iraq today. But let's move down to the estate tax. I got about 40 seconds. Tell us what's going on with the estate.
Well,
if
you're worried about estate
taxes,
think about giving more to your heirs while you're still alive. Because you know the gift tax exclusion has been rising to keep up with inflation, and we're saying that next year is going to be $12,000 per person. And if you're
per person per year,
and if you're a couple and you both agree on the gift, it can be $24,000.
$24,000, so if you've got two kids, it could be $48,000.
Right.
That you could get out of your estate that would not be subjected to tax, to the estate tax.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
We're
going in the right direction. Hey, Joan, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
Good job. We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. She'll be back, I promise. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and once again, my heart, my thoughts, and my prayers are going out to all the people who have been devastated by Hurricane Katrina, especially the small business owners. God bless you. God be with you. This is Jim Blassingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.